Welcome to The Future is Female Powerlifting. A show where women of all strengths can explore the world of female powerlifting. I am your host, Heidi Donnell, a 60-kilo powerlifting gym owner, and each episode we bring you an inspiring interview or message to help you unlock your true inner strength potential. Thanks for tuning in.
Aloha, my beautiful friends, and welcome back. We are on episode number 42. Super stoked to be here. I mean, we are going strong every week in the new year, and I hope that you are enjoying every one of these episodes. And today, we have Barbell Medicine's own Aaliyah Lutz to the mic. And let me tell you, I loved speaking with her. Aaliyah comes from some real good, real life story, struggle with weight loss and moving on into being a powerlifter, and not only a powerlifter, but changing her career from teaching to being a coach full time. And this is the craziest thing is she is strong as shit, like so strong. I just watched her squat 415. She's a master's lifter, 415. Do you hear what I'm saying right now? It's phenomenal. However, this whole episode was fantastic. Aaliyah and I got to talk about the beginning of her journey, how she started off as actually really into cooking and more of the culinary art of cooking, and how that sort of spiraled for her, and how she found love and affection through cooking for people and caring for people in that way. And I know a lot of that feeling. I think a lot of us show our love through food. I'm the same way. If anybody's pregnant, you know, has surgery, I cook them food. Actually, Melissa, somebody recently had gallbladder surgery at our gym. Shout out to Melissa. I brought her over some lasagna. You know, it's just something that I do, and it's been ingrained in my family. And it was also the same for Aaliyah. And so she talks about that struggle and how she really started to transition into caring for herself and not identifying with that role of the person who's going to bring food to all the parties and sort of embodying the person that she is today. Stick to the end because I know you'll love her stories and how she moved through CrossFit and eventually became part of Barbell Medicine. If you haven't heard of Barbell Medicine, they are a group of very bright, very educated, very strong ass sciencey mofos, as I like to call them. Some are doctors, some are in the field, some are just like Aaliyah, who was, you know, pretty much became part of Barbell Medicine because she hired Jordan, who is the founder of Barbell Medicine. And so it's an amazing story. So please stick around to the end. You're going to love every bit of it. And this episode is brought to you by my gym, Core Strength and Performance in Huntsville, Alabama, where we live through strength. And if you are looking for online training, for in-person training, come and visit us at core256.com. Don't forget to follow us on Instagram and Facebook. Holla at your girl. Now, if you really love this podcast and you've reached out to me, if you haven't left a review, please do so. I would truly, truly love it. Every time you submit some sort of review and it's a written one, girl, I'm about to read that because I love hearing how this, you know, this show can reach you and it's impacted your life. So if that's you out there, please leave a review. I would greatly appreciate it. And now let's get into it with Barbell Medicine's Aaliyah. But I loved, and I wanted to talk about your article because I really, really loved parts of it that I felt like even I could identify with. And the one of the big, powerful things that I got out of the beginning of the article, you had talked about how food was your way to comfort people. And, you know, like that was your way where you were happy, you're getting recipes, you're finding all these desserts and things like that. And I thought, wow, what a funny way how we found value in that. You know, you found value in yourself through that and helping and seeing other people happy. But inside, you were still very self-conscious about yourself and things like walking through the aisles, you know, trying to make yourself small through these aisles, right?
Yeah.
And that's crazy. So tell me a little bit, maybe you can give a little backstory on that, how that started for you. And, you know, after all this turmoil, how you turned to Barbell Medicine.
Okay, good. Yeah. So I think the food and its role in my life comes from a couple of different things. So one, I'm from a very large, close family. Yes. And as often happens in large families that are living, that are, you know, have a close relationship, but also live close together, food is a big deal.
Yeah.
So I'm actually the oldest of 10 kids.
Wow. And
yes. So when I say big family, we all live within about an hour and a half of each other still, and we see each other a lot. And just as a matter of course, you know, food yeah. becomes a really big part of all that happens. And there's a lot of celebrations and all of that. And I loved being in the kitchen, and that became a really tangible way for me to be a part of everything that was going on.
Right.
I loved coming up with new things to do, and I was pretty good at feeding a lot of people and feeding them well. And so then that carried over into a lot of other areas of life. Socially, I became quickly known as the one who could help cook,
yeah.
round out a party menu, you know, whatever right. it is. And there's some immediate gratification in that. I mean, I think we're all looking for different ways to fit in and to be appreciated and to show our care and appreciation for others. So it just yeah. kind of like blossomed.
Yeah.
And so there was a lot of good about it. But because I also, I think, at the same time used food to try to manage or battle a lot of my own stress,
yeah.
It got out of control big yeah. time. And when I was in my 20s, I also went to through a cooking school program for about 10. It was about 10 months.
Wow.
Yeah. So I was like fully invested.
Oh, and yeah. So you're the person that everybody is like, oh, let's wait till Leah gets here. Exactly. Is she going to bring the good yes. stuff?
Yes. Yes. Or, you know, I'm going to have a party, but can you help me bring this? You know,
and, right. And right.
Because
right.
it was very, you know, I loved doing it and it was very rewarding. And then I went to cooking school, started in baking and pastry, loved that. Then kind of moved a little bit more to the hotline, learned a ton. Obviously cooked a lot more for people. I was making things all the time, eating, you know, trying to figure out what was going to happen. Ended up deciding after doing some private catering and personal cooking work on the side, just dinner parties, wedding cakes, that sort of thing, but it wasn't a career I wanted.
Mm.
And so I never worked like in a restaurant full time or anything like that, which looking back was probably a good thing.
Right. Right.
You know, but it's still, you know, it, that time in cooking school definitely cemented this as an important part of my life. And so then as I continued to gain, it was really in my 20s then, and probably about that time that I gained quite a bit of weight, and then began the what seemed like and was for probably about 10 years, just never ending cycle of go on a drastic diet, lose a lot of weight, gain weight back, yeah. and just over and over and over again. Mm-hmm. And it, as so many people know, it was frustrating. It was just, I felt so defeated.
Yeah.
And yeah. And honestly, as I neared my 30s, started to think, maybe I can't change this.
Yeah.
You know, this just seemed so overwhelming and I was so caught up in it that I wasn't quite sure how I was ever going to get out. And like you mentioned, I had written about trying to be small or noticing how I was in the way and that sort of thing. I was working in a job where all of a sudden I had to fly a lot. And that was one of the things, yeah, that like really made it very clear to me. You're sitting in an airplane and I remember thinking, I don't know what I'm going to do if I have to ask for a seatbelt yeah. extender, you yeah. know, feeling very self-conscious about taking up more than your seat,
yeah.
bumping people as you go down the aisle. And, I started to realize then about that time that I was, as much as I loved people and was quite the extrovert, I was turning down social engagements from time to time because I was too embarrassed about yeah. not having anything to wear or feeling like I was sticking out, that sort of thing. And that just made me so sad, honestly. Like, yeah. I was just like, this is not who I am. It's not who I want to be.
Right.
And it was pretty, like, emotionally overwhelming for a while because you're caught in this cycle of, this is not who I am, but I don't know what to do because I've tried all these diets you read about or are told about. And so finally, I came to a place where I realized this was a big problem. It had gone on for quite a while. And so a quick fix was not going to be the answer.
Yeah.
it was going to be a pretty involved solution, and it was probably going to take a while. And so I remember deciding that I was ready to do almost anything that I needed to do now in order to attack this problem. And so that meant spending more money than I had before,
Right.
Making that financial commitment and saying, okay, sometimes we have to put something, even like our money, on the line in order to make a big change like this. That was a big realization for me, that it wasn't wasted money to go to a gym or have a trainer or pay a coach. That was an investment in me changing. And I had to be willing to accept that. Yeah. And then I also had to decide that it just had to take almost a top priority in my life, you know, that my life couldn't come to a stop because of this, but going to the gym had to happen. I couldn't make excuses for it anymore. And then I just decided I was going to stop cooking almost everything that I had been cooking.
Oh my gosh. And so was this just like you had a pivotal moment and you just kind of sort of came to these conclusions? Cause these are all big, big things. Like these are big rocks to move and those don't come very easily. So that, I mean, those are huge. Desserts. I mean, that's the thing that you identified really with, you know, and being a chef in these kind of areas. Wow.
Yeah. Big time. And so, you know, I had kind of in the process made some small changes, you know, like, it wasn't a very difficult change for me to go from eating kind of a lot of foods to then doing the whole food kind of diet.
Right.
For me to embrace. I was like, yes, I can cook, I can make anything. But then the problem was I wasn't losing weight because I can cook and I can make anything taste good.
Isn't that the truth?
Right. And so like my coach now, who I'll talk about that part in just a minute, but like, he will remind me sometimes, he's like, Leah, you can make anything taste better. So the point is not like what kind of, like, just say, eat these foods or not these foods. And that's really what happened. Like,
right.
People joke about like, how can you gain weight on Whole 30 or paleo or on these restricted diets? I could do it. that's me.
Well, I think one of the biggest things, and that was, you had talked about it in the article, was removing some of the fats, right? Because those are the hidden things that you like, well, it's allowed. I can have avocado oil and all this kind of, then all of a sudden a cup of oil later, you are like, wait a second, I just drank 2000 calories today, you know? And that's, I could see that happening very easily, like, especially if you know how to use all those things.
Exactly. You go from somebody who could make, you know, make her own croissants and danishes or wedding cakes or whatever, and then be like, oh, sure, I could make the highest calorie sweet potatoes you can imagine, you know, trust me.
No refined sugars. No.
Exactly. Right? So then when I started saying, okay, this has got to be drastic, that's when I hired Jordan Feigenbaum with Barbell Medicine.
Yes.
And I was one of his first online clients. People always ask, you know, like, gosh, how did you guys meet each other? And
Starting Strength. Just,
Yeah.
Of all the things. The Starting Strength website, right?
Yeah. I knew another Starting Strength coach. And so I was reading Jordan's stuff and found out he was a strength coach who also did nutrition. About that same time, I had had surgery on a complete tear of my rotator cuff.
Oh my gosh, yes.
So then, you know, like, you introduce this new fear of like, if I can't move my arm, then how am I going to go to the gym? All that. So that's when I hired Jordan, and I had made a lot of these. There were a number of changes I had made. I had been going to a CrossFit gym, really established a lot of the habit of physical activity, but he was definitely the one who helped to challenge a lot of my preconceived notions and to just remind me that it was going to be hard, but it was going to be worth it.
Yeah.
And so we had to go through a lot of things, you know. After all those years of dieting, I had tons of weird food ideas, you know.
Oh, I had the same ones reading through those. And at this point, you had already lost like 70 pounds, right? So you had gone to the CrossFit gym, you've been consistent with that, and then you had torn your rotator cuff. And that's when you started sort of gaining the weight or not being able to move, and the fear started coming back. That's when you reached out to Jordan, correct?
Yep.
Yeah. And so, and when you were talking about like, oh, carbs make me fat. I don't know how many times I've fucking said that before. And you know, right? You know, yeah, that carbs don't make you fat, you know, but right? That's the, yeah, that's the story that we tell ourselves, you know, in, yes, fear at times. So that's interesting. So, so what were the areas that he worked with you on those?
Yeah. So it was things, so right away, it was things like not being afraid of foods in general. Mm. And so helping me to pull back from what had become a lot of really emotional responses or feelings about food.
So what kind of foods?
So, you know, so it was like carbs specifically at first, right? And I remember him saying, I was having, you know, I'd say, I can't meet these carb goals that you gave me. And he was like, sure you can. And he said, you know, why don't you have some oatmeal? And I said, I don't think I can do it. Like, I'm so afraid of it. And we both remember the conversation of him saying, so here's the deal. I don't want you to be afraid of it, but it's a bowl of oatmeal. So you're going to have it tomorrow. And if something bad happens tomorrow, then we'll know and we'll stop. But I don't think anything bad's going to happen, but we can change it if we have to. And so I said, okay, I will have a bowl of oatmeal tomorrow. And I remember thinking, oh my gosh, I do not ever remember oatmeal being this good.
Wow. You know? Yeah. But what when it hits your lips.
Right? And sure enough, nothing bad happened.
Right.
And I continued to lose weight and I felt really good. And then I think one of the things that changed as we had these ongoing conversations was not only that the scale was slowly moving, and at times it was really slow. I mean, when you have like over 100 pounds to lose and you're not on a very drastic diet, it's slow.
Yeah.
You know, but I knew we were moving forward, and it was because of conversations even like that, where I knew that I was having to figure out that being so consumed with a fear about food was going to have to change if I was ever going to like not be caught in this diet life.
Right.
And so that from the nutrition side was definitely one of the huge things that Jordan and I had to work through, was how do I create new food habits, new ways of looking at food, new ways of thinking about food and myself? How do I gain this confidence in myself? And that took time. You know, yeah, to feel like I had been someone who was out of control when it came from to food.
Yeah.
You know, when you're, yeah, truly, you know, clinically morbidly obese, you can't really get away from the fact that you feel like, I don't know what to do personally. Like there's something wrong with me.
Yeah.
And so then to get to the point where you realize, actually, I do know what to do. Sometimes it's not easy.
Yeah.
Sometimes I don't do it. Yeah. Right. But getting to where you like do it enough, it becomes habitual enough that you stop worrying about it. And yeah, I would say now, like 7 or 8 years later, that's probably like, obviously I feel so different. I'm so much healthier. Like confidence that like, I feel like I had inside and like would come out, like it's easier to find now, but I'm not afraid of being that person who has no control,
yeah,
over this anymore.
So do you think that there are some steps that people could put into place if they were taking this for themselves, you know, and they have, maybe they were in the same, you know, in your same shoes and they're fearful of certain foods? Are there some things that you would recommend?
Yeah. So I think that having some sort of, not even necessarily a coach, but some sort of accountability, mm-hmm, is really, mm-hmm, important, because I think a lot of times, like going back to how my story started, food is so social, yeah, and cultural and familial and personal that oftentimes, if we're going to talk about a big change, I think we need someone or some other people around. And so for me, it wasn't just Jordan, but it was also learning how to interact and speak with my closest family and friends.
Right. And
so, you know, being able to tell them, I'm not going to make the dessert anymore, or I'm going to take time off. I'm not going to make Christmas cookies for everybody this year, a birthday cake, that sort of thing. And at times it was hard.
Right.
Different people understood or heard it differently.
Right.
Sometimes they took it personally, kind of like, oh no, Leah's saying that no one should eat this. And right, now I feel attacked.
Right.
So I had to learn a lot. about how to talk to people. But I think, so first of all, acknowledging that our social interactions are really important. So anything you can do to be honest to people, reach out to people and say, I need your help here. Can you help me with this in some way is really, really important. Because once I was honest with people, far more people than I ever would have expected were like, yes, we want you to do this.
Yeah.
You know? And we live in fear thinking everybody's judging us all the time.
Yeah.
But in reality, most people want the best for us.
Yes.
You know? And so they're willing to say, oh yeah, if eating at this place is hard for you, then we don't want to eat there.
Yeah. That's wonderful.
Yeah. So that's a really big one. And then I think secondly, understanding that it's so much about finding your personal habits and reactions to food and exercise, and then figuring out slowly how you can change them.
Yes.
You know? And I think it's different for a lot of different people. There's no like set rules, but for me, establishing a lot of consistency made it really doable. If I knew that there are certain meals that I can always fall back on, that always kind of make me feel like I'm in control of what I'm eating, I know they're good for me, they kind of spark that, yep, you know, I'm eating my Greek yogurt and my oatmeal and my fruit for breakfast.
Yeah,
and it's that habitual thing that fuels me, but then also mentally reminds me, this was a great choice for your health. So you're taking the right step.
Right.
You know? So having the habits of food choices helps a lot. And then for me, it was things like not finding that balance between not over-regulating your life, because can tend to be a perfectionist and say, I have to hit all of these things or I'm failing.
Right.
Right. So, and then I have to give up if I fail on one thing. Right.
Screw it.
So it was finding things that were helpful to me to keep me in control of the situation, yet not over-regulated and rule-driven. So honestly, even now, a big one for me is I can't snack. You know, if I snack, likely within a couple of days, I'm snacking way more than I should be.
You know, that is one of the things for me. So I've had to, if I am going to snack, it can only be a certain kind of snack.
Yes.
So I can have an apple and a shake, or, you know, I have certain things that I can eat. But if I start grabbing those plantain chips that my husband loves to buy, and then all of a sudden I got some, like, this dip that was some mango salsa thing that he made.
Yeah.
The whole bag is gone. The whole, I was like, damn it. But on the surface, I'm like, plantain chips, those are great. You know, they're, you know, and it's fresh salsa, so that can't be bad. No, you know.
Right.
Too many calories. It was thoughtless. Yes. It was very much me just chomping down. And that's exactly, it's funny because snacking is often encouraged, like, hey, you don't want to go hungry.
Yes,
but there is a limit to that as well. You know, like, and you should know, and that's knowing yourself.
Yes. Yes, it is. Yeah. And even that you mentioned that, not going hungry, like that was also a realization that feeling a little bit of hunger was actually normal.
Yes. That's okay.
Yeah. Which I don't think I had accepted before, you know,
interesting.
And so I had to realize that's normal. It's not a bad feeling. And even that, like we're told often, oh, if you're hungry, then have a good snack, healthy snack, eat this. And for somebody who's lived a pretty disordered food life for a while, some of those suggestions are actually pretty negative.
Right.
Change. You know, they might be good for another population, but not for somebody who's already kind of been in a habit of ignoring what might be normal food body cues, you know? And that's sometimes what I remind people of now. Someone else might be able to follow a very eat moderately, intuitively kind of pattern. And I've gotten much better at it, but it's taken like 8 years. And that's not a very short time.
No.
Whereas a lot of people will just tell you diet is a really bad word.
Yeah.
Don't ever think about restricting food. But I think that kind of advice comes from people maybe who haven't dealt with years and years of disordered eating.
I agree. I think that there is a place for everything.
Yes.
You know, I think that many of us who are now probably happy with our body started off with some sort of diet or some challenge or some crap that now is being ridiculed by the other fitness people. You know, I can see where a lot of people are coming from, but I try not to negate, unless it's really, really dumb, like a cayenne pepper lemonade, right. You know, like it's something like that. Like,
which I probably did.
Right. I did. Not going to lie. Beyonce did it. In the back of my mind, I was like, fuck, if it's good for Beyonce.
Yeah. Add that pepper to speed up metabolism. That's going to be the trick, right?
That's going to be, that's what I've been missing this whole time. How could I not see it? But outside of that, I do agree. I think that there is a place for structure, right? Because you're talking about people who have nowhere to actually turn. They have no nutritional knowledge, you know, when it comes to how to substitute or when to substitute or how many calories are in that. So having a structure, which is a diet, can help that. And then, you know, and the how restrictive it is, probably that could be argued, you know, like how restrictive we want something for somebody who's just starting off. But I think that's a very interesting way of looking at it. And we all have our own ways of realizations. And I actually, one of my clients who's on her nutrition program, this is 4 months in, and she had said that this is the first time that she's actually felt hungry. And she's like, I can't even remember the last time I felt hungry because I would just continually snack. She's a teacher. So she would have like gummy bears at her table. The kids would bring stuff. There's in the break room, you know, there's all these things. And she's like, I never thought about it. I was always kind of just doing this. And so when we got to that point where we're talking about, all right, what is hunger? How hungry is hungry? You know, what is 20% hungry? What is, you know, all these things. And so it was interesting that I never even thought about how she never thought about that, you know?
Yeah.
So that's crazy. So you went through this whole route. You started with Jordan, you're going on this path. And then what made you decide to kind of go down the route as like, you know, I'm going to do this as a profession.
Right.
Cause that's like a whole thing.
Yeah. Big change.
Yes. Right. So what were you doing for your job before?
I was a teacher.
Oh, you were. Oh, see, so that's like, you know what I'm talking about.
Yes. Yeah. So yes, I was a teacher and I was teaching for about 18 years before I became a full-time coach. So when I started working on all of this, and even when I quit, like I love teaching. There's so much about it that I absolutely love. The change was very difficult at first for me. Yeah. And then once I made the decision, it was easy and it was exactly what I needed to do and wanted to do. But, as I was going through these changes myself, and I was at the gym all the time and I'd made these changes, people were asking me a lot about what I had done and could I help them out, whether it was with their food or with their training. And I found I was doing more and more of it.
Right.
And so, yeah, so my personality is that, oh, well, if I'm going to help these people, I want to learn a little bit more about it.
Right.
You know, I don't want it to just be my own personal experience. I think in part because I knew that just like you had mentioned, everybody's a little bit different, right? And so we know things about what we can do for training and nutrition, but there's a lot of different ways to go about that if we understand the fundamental principles versus just coming from, I read this in a book or I tried this one thing. So now I'm going to give you the one thing that will work when we don't really understand why it worked.
Yeah.
So I was like, okay, I need to figure this out. So I started learning a lot more and coaching more people in the process and competing as well in the process. And that, which I never thought I would do that either.
I was going to say, we kind of glazed over the part where you actually started powerlifting now that I think about it.
Wait, so yeah, Jordan had talked to me. He said, you know, I think it was during my first year of working with him. And he said, I think a great goal for you would be to enter a powerlifting meet at for the USPA was they had the meets closest to me. He said, why don't you enter, send in your registration for the 165 pound class. And that's going to be your goal. And I was like, oh, like number one, 165 pounds sounded so tiny and so far away. I was like, I don't know, but I knew that having that concrete goal, like he knew that me signing up for it was going to be like, okay.
Right.
I'm going to hit that. But then there was a whole deal. I said, I can't do a meet. Like, I cannot walk out in public in a singlet. Number one.
Oh, the first fear of almost every woman is that.
Right. I mean, keep in mind, like, at that time in my life, I never even wore shorts. You know, I mean, I was that inhibited about how right. I looked and what I wore. So the idea of walking out in a singlet was just, no. And so we talked about it. And then I said, he said, just think about it. And I kind of let it mull over for a few months. And then finally I said, you know, I have been making a lot of decisions to change my life and do things that I never had done before. And I'm finding a lot of success in challenging myself. Yes. So I'm going to do this. I never would have imagined I would have done it. It seems like it's going to almost kill me, but I'll try it.
It's a lot of trust because if Jordan hadn't suggested that, right, you're already trusting him with your nutrition, trusting him with all these parts that are very scary. I mean, I could just feel the anxiety from one, the food to two, the singlet on stage, because I know that fear as well. And so I can only imagine feeling that way about your body and then committing to something like that. Yes. So you put the pedal to the metal then at this point.
Yep. Wow. Yep. And I made weight like by the skin of my teeth.
Yeah.
But you know, I did it. My dad went with me to the meet.
Oh my gosh,
Jordan lived across country at that time. So my dad went with me. And then my mom came to watch, but my dad was there from, you know, weigh-ins to the end. And, that was kind of like the start of him getting totally involved in the sport of powerlifting as my handler.
Your dad? And,
yes.
Oh my gosh, I love it.
Right? And like, I mean, it makes total sense now that I think about it, you know, because he had been like the baseball coach for, you know, brothers and all that. But he dove like head first into the world of powerlifting and figured out how meets run, what needs to happen. And so now we're at the point where he's gone to almost every one of my meets with me.
Oh my God.
Even when I went to Belarus and competed at Worlds, my dad went, and he knows everything about my competition. He knows like he remembers which women would be
your competitor
closest to me at any meet.
That is so awesome.
He knows the rules of powerlifting, so he knows, you know, like what kind of attempts would we likely want to make.
Are you kidding me? Like even attempt selections? Like this is crazy. He's like, forget the soccer mom. I'm the powerlifting dad.
Exactly.
Powerlifting papa. That's what I'm going to coin him that if I ever see him.
100%. Yeah. I mean, like even the other day I sent him, I've been working on my squat and some different things. And so I sent him a squat video and I said, so I made some changes to my squat. What do you think? And he texts back and he said, did you widen your stance?
You're like, as a matter of fact,
I sure did. And he said, oh, it seems like I might've suggested that a while back. And I said, yes, Dad, it was a good move.
Like still at this age, right? That you're still saying your parents are right.
Right? Oh, I know.
Damn it.
Yeah. So, but that first meet was nerve wracking, but I had so much fun.
Yeah.
I tell people all the time, almost every powerlifter at every powerlifting meet is so supportive.
Yes.
And they've been through all kinds of things themselves. I think we meet some of the coolest people at powerlifting meets.
Yes.
And they may not be always the kind of people that we would meet or necessarily interact with in other parts of life, but we're there like all doing the same thing, challenging ourselves, being vulnerable in front of each other. Mm-hmm. And everybody knows it because we're all in the same place.
Yep.
You know, and people know what it's like to train for a meet. They know what it's like to have the anxiety on the platform or to fail or to succeed. And so people are there helping each other out. And I was just like blown away. I was like, this was fun.
Yeah.
These people were so supportive. I didn't know them from a hole in the wall. And all of a sudden they're like caring that I make my deadlift, you know?
Yeah.
And cheering me on. And that was just really affirming for me.
Yeah.
And so I kept competing. And Jordan was like, you going to do another meet? And I said, I think I will. So I kept competing and have competed now for quite a while. And, you know, I've been able to compete at the Arnold. I've been to Worlds twice, Nationals. Like,
can you imagine that? No. 10 years ago.
Right?
If your 10 years ago person saw you today. Yeah. I always think that that is amazing how so much is possible if we just take the right steps and be okay with it taking a little longer than we would expect.
Yep. And that's key right there. Yeah. Like, I couldn't have imagined it. And I remember even thinking any change will take so long, it won't be worth it.
Yes.
But now I look at it, and if I'm objective about it, I like look at everything that changed, and looking back, it doesn't even seem like that long anymore. Like, I know it was, but it's just kind of like a blip now.
Right. That time frame totally is.
Right.
So, okay. So then you really got into it. You started studying and thought, all right, I should know a little bit more about what I'm suggesting.
Yes.
Being and the teacher that you are, I'm sure. Right.
Exactly. And so like in that regard, it was a really easy change because it's now I'm still teaching. Obviously I'm still involved in people's lives. So many of the things that I really love, but about, I think it was about 5 years ago, Jordan said, how about you do some coaching part-time? That would be great. I was like, yeah, sure. I mean, I'll always take on new things like that. So I started coaching part-time, and after probably a pretty short while, he started saying, so when are you going to quit your job? When are you going to be done teaching? Like, this would be really good if you just quit your job, right?
Teach adults in fitness.
No, like I'm a teacher. Like, this is who I am. Like, I'm not going to. Oh, I like coaching, but I'm a teacher. Like, so that time I was teaching, I had also been involved in curriculum development and some teacher training. Like, I was like, I love this. He was like, I know, but you're a coach too. Like, I think you should be a coach, and you could be a coach for barbell medicine, and that would be good. And, you know, finally I said, I just started thinking, you know, I do really love this. Yeah. And what's stopping me from making the change? And for months, I kept thinking, but what if it doesn't work out, right?
Right.
What if I can't make it? What if there's just like, what if I'm not well enough regarded as a female coach? That was a real big fear of mine.
Oh, yeah.
Because there aren't too many.
Yes, you know? I know.
And so I just thought, what if no one actually wants to hire me because I'm a woman or because they don't know me and that kind of thing? And then I kept thinking, and then I kept realizing that I just kept talking about things I was afraid of again, instead of what could be.
Right. The fear trap. Right?
Exactly. Yeah. It came back. And a couple people advised, I talked to a few close friends and family, and they said, what's the worst that could happen? Like, you try it. The world always needs teachers. You go back to teaching if you have to, but you have an opportunity to do this. You do love it. You're good at it. Go for it. And so I said, okay, I will go for it. And so I've been coaching full time for, I think, about 3.5 years now.
Wow.
And I love it. love it.
That is awesome. I can totally tell that, you know, just the way that, I mean, I follow your social media. You can see the way that you try to connect with people. Give them good content, things that they can learn, that women can learn. And I love that you have that thought with yourself, because I think that's a big one for a lot of women who are trying to step into a role that might be male dominated, you know, and especially in our field, you know, I mean.
Right. Imagine going from teaching, where it's like almost all women.
All women, right.
to coaching, where you're like, there are hardly any.
Yeah, totally. You know, it's funny. My parents are both teachers. So my mother was a principal, and then my father was a special ed teacher. And so growing up, they were always like, you'll be a teacher. Maybe I like teaching. I was like, I don't want to teach any kids. Like, I don't want to teach. And then what did I end up doing? Teaching adults, you know? And I love being a coach. Like, I think just the audience was different, but I do really love this interaction that I have with people, that I like being able to communicate something, they learn it and they implement it, you know, and all those aspects of it. I really love that part. And so I it's great to see that there are more strength coaches out there, and they love you. I see you on all their stuff, you know, they love you to pieces. And so tell me a little bit about what you're doing right now. What are some new things that you yourself are offering and trying to move forward?
Yeah. So I'm active in, you know, all the different ventures of barbell medicine. So I work as a coach and I have a full-time coaching load, but then we also do seminars and things like that. So I get to travel around just about one a month to different places around the United States.
Oh my gosh, awesome.
Internationally, right? Yes. So I get to drop into a city, meet new people who show up, interact with them, you know, find out a little bit about them and coach them over the weekend. I love that. And then we're also really trying to, at Barbell Medicine, like kind of reflective of the previous conversation, the guys that I work with have been incredibly supportive of me and my role as a woman in this world. And like, I know that, I mean, I've put in an incredible amount of work, you know, but they've believed in me from the very beginning, even at times when I haven't believed in myself. And that's been really helpful. Yeah. And so as a group, we do, not just me, but they also care about bringing more training information, health information to women who, honestly, as you and I both know, a lot of times there's more barriers for women to get into the gym and get under a barbell than most guys will ever understand.
Yes.
You know? And so I know that from personal experience, they see that. And so I get to now, it's kind of growing quite rapidly, work on expanding the work that Barbell Medicine does with women. And so that's really exciting for me.
Yeah.
So we have new women's specific coaching programs. I coach men and women, but being able to dedicate a little bit more time and attention to this is really exciting.
Yes.
Like my big project for 2020 is seeing that grow, having more reach in that regard, putting out more content. So mainly so that women understand the benefits of training themselves, are encouraged to step out and not be afraid of it. Know that they have a place in the gym, just like everybody else.
Yes.
And that they can, but that there's things that we can help each of them with so that they feel more confident in that place. You know,
yes.
I can just say, hey, go to the gym. You deserve to be there. Do it. Right.
Right.
And then actually help a woman who's afraid of being there for whatever reason. So, you know, and I know you understand this so well, but it's understanding what is it like at the gym? What kind of program do you have? Are you prepared when you go there? Do you know how to do what is before you, rather than kind of wandering around thinking, I'm not sure what to do? But then also encouraging these women that when it's a little bit scary or when you're a little unsure, that's actually normal. Like everybody feels like that.
Yep.
And it's going to get better.
Yep.
And you're going to grow from it both physically and mentally.
Yes.
And it's going to be totally, totally worth it. So expanding the work that we do with women is really exciting for me.
Yeah.
I'm also, last year I did this, and then the plan is that I'll do this again this year. I'm an assistant coach for the USAPL Masters team.
Yes.
So I get to travel to Worlds with them and coach, which is an awesome experience as well.
That's awesome.
Masters lifters, I like lifters of all kinds, but as you mentioned, we're masters. Masters lifters are super cool because they've been through so many things in life.
Yeah.
And if they're powerlifting and traveling around the world, they're like, I really love this.
Yeah.
And I probably, you know, they all have their own story. And when we're traveling, then I get to figure out what that is and what makes them tick and have a lot of fun with that. And then hopefully just doing more things like that or related to that. I'm going to work at a Masters powerlifting camp in St. Louis come the fall and be one of their staff coaches. So I'm hoping that more of those kind of things grow.
But yeah.
I know that coupled with it, like my goal as well in 2020 is to continue to create more content so that I can provide more information for people as well.
Yeah, I think that's wonderful. And it's so funny how when women get a little afraid about going to the gym, you know, those first time jitters and those feelings. And I always think to myself, like, you know, you're always worried about like, how are they looking at you? People are going to, I look stupid. Like, you know how many people there don't know what they're doing either. They try to play like all those guys standing around with headphones on and gloves on. They don't know what they're doing either. So don't even worry.
I know. I tell women that all the time. I say, I know it feels like it, but now where I am now, I can go to the gym and I can see that, like, yes, crystal clear. But right? I'm the one that walks in and I know what I'm doing.
Right.
Sometimes I'm surrounded by men who have no clue what's going on.
Like, that dude was just on this machine to that machine to that machine. Like, he's just doing a circuit in the area. He has no plan whatsoever. And he's like, there's no rep range. There's no progress. There's nothing.
Yep. He's just in there doing something on his phone, then walking over here. Yeah.
Yeah. That's hilarious. Well, you know, one of the big questions that I get to ask everybody I get to interview. What the hell was I thinking? Where you think back to a time, and since you have a lot of time in your training, you think back to a time where you might have done something so dumb that now you look back and think, God, that was the stupidest thing I could have ever done. What the hell was I thinking? Can you think of a time that that might have happened for you?
Well, the biggest what the hell was I thinking was definitely when, and this is not meant as a smear against CrossFit, because I think it does a lot of good for a lot of people. But for me, when I tore my rotator cuff and had my shoulder trouble, it was compounded without question by my competitive nature, coupled with my fear of not doing CrossFit in order to change. And so I pushed myself to incredible amounts of pain.
Wow.
And that, so that's like my biggest personal, and at the time I wouldn't have been able to explain that it was, I, even for a long time, I said, well, it was because I was so competitive. It was because I was so competitive, and that was part of it. But now I look back and I know it was because I was competitive, but also again, because I was afraid.
Yeah.
Because I kept telling myself, I have to be doing this as much as possible, as hard as possible. There was just no like context for how it was going to be fitting in my life. Right. And so I just went, all in. More is better. Harder.
More is more.
Yeah. And so that was my big, big no. No. And so, like, even now, when I see that in a client, I try to gently like point out, more is not better. Like, pushing yourself to just feel like a train wreck all the time is not the answer, you know. Even when we're talking about training, it's balance. It's who we are as a whole person.
Yeah.
And so that's my big what the hell. Yep.
Yeah. I think that's a big one. I definitely have with a lot of people who come from a CrossFit background, because I have a few clients who come from a CrossFit background. And the way I program, I have some AMRAMs in there.
Yes.
But they're not everywhere. You know, they're just here and there. Otherwise, it's very minimal in the sense, if you're going to compare it to Grace, or something, if you're going to do that. And that's always the thing. It's like pulling them back, and showing them that the end picture, you know, this is your end goal. You want to compete over here.
Right.
Going balls out here is just going to increase that fatigue. Increased fatigue is a higher likely to get injured. Right. So we don't want to do that right here. We kind of like want to just max it so it's close to the end. Then we deload you and we peak you. We do all this great stuff, but you don't want to do all that right here. And it's funny, because that's really hard to manage. I think society right now, more is more, right? Let's go high intensity. You want no rest. We got 10 seconds in between, all these things. And that's a real hard one for me as a gym owner as well, because we have to have that conversation. Like, I'm very clear. Like, this is not what we do. Right. We do not make you. No, I loved CrossFit. I did CrossFit for a while too. And high intensity has its place, but it is on our, you know, on our pyramid. It is on the very top, right?
Right.
It is the very last thing that we implement, and that it should be in there, but not at the very bottom. So we're not doing tons of stuff.
Exactly.
And that is a mentality shift that I could see also being with everything else, nutrition and everything else you do.
Yeah.
So that's crazy. That's a big, what the hell was I thinking?
Exactly.
That's so funny. One of our old listeners, and I always bring the story up, was that she had to pour Greek yogurt on her vagina. because she used a high grade capsaicin rub that was for horses on her hip. And you know what happens when you sweat? That shit goes down. So it's a good one. When she told me yogurt, I almost died. I was like, oh my goodness. She's like, I tried everything. I think she might even tried to put bread on there. I don't know.
And as funny as it is, like, as you know, once you're around like this culture for a while, you're like, yeah, I could see someone doing that.
Yes. Like pee and poop becomes very normal after all the talk about and periods. And it's like all these conversations that we have, right? You know,
I know.
It's so
know,
funny. Right? Leah, this has been fantastic. And I know that everybody is going to get something out of this. And I really love that you shared your story with us. And if anybody is interested, I'm going to leave everything in the show notes so they can contact you and be a part more of all the programs that you're having for women. And you just click on her bio. She's got everything there. I love everything. You got seminars. You're talking about all your content, your article. If you guys want to read the article that she has, it's also found on her Instagram bio. So thank you so much for being a part of this.
No, thank you. This was a super fun conversation.
Yes, it was.
Fun for me to be able to connect with you now. I mean, like, I'm seeing you on Instagram, so this is fantastic.
I know, it's so funny. It's like all the, you know, social friends.